Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon, high school tennis fans. Welcome to the UR Ten Network, where you'll find all your tennis news. This is your host, Coach Denise, bringing you the FHS-TCA perspective on high school tennis. Those of you that were patient enough for about to listen for almost 50 minutes a little while ago heard me telling you about the UR10 network. There's been some changes made. We thank Jason Haynes, the founder of the network, for doing it, and we thank him for the year and a half that we've been on it. We want to thank J.C. Weber, who has taken over the network, and hopefully we'll have his We Coach Tennis on our network pretty soon. Coach Chuck Reese and his American Tennis will be still on the network, and Lisa Stone, Parent and Aces, will still be on the network. And unfortunately, I was the last one to sit there and get the word about a time change, and I came in at the wrong time, and I will start over again. I do think I see that our guests are on the air right now. Let me get them on, but before I talk to them, I would like a little introduction. Some of you remember, I guess about 16 years ago, I wrote a short book called The Courtside Notebook, and I took that the idea from a book that Dr. Bryce Young and Linda Buckner wrote, The Courtside Coach. I quoted them quite often in their book. I quoted other people too, but you'll find more quotes from there. And at the time, Linda LeClaire had her first book out, and that was Yes, God Speak to Women, too. And that was, it's a book I'm still in love with, although she has a second book out that is probably more germane to our industry and we were talking about. But I was glad to hear Dr. Young at the PTR Symposium in Hilton Head a few months ago introduce the book and talk about how male perception when they read that, because I gave that book out, God, I don't know how many of those books I'd given out, and but I've had the same thing from men that came by and said, gee, I didn't know. That's not what I expected in that book. And, of course, the confidence factor, when you're talking about preparing for, I should say just tennis and not just sports, but really for life, in my opinion, it's just a very, very important book. I want to thank the two of you, Bryce and Linda, for hanging in with me. One of these days I'm going to get into the 21st century and learn how to do all this computer stuff. Are you both there? I do apologize to you and the audience.
Coach, this is Dr. Bryce Young.
And Linda LeClaire.
And we are so happy to be here with you and your listeners. This is The UR Tennis Network is providing a wonderful service to everyone who's in love with our sport.
Well, thank you very much. And we feel the same way, and hopefully we're going to get more and more people. And I'm especially proud, I must say, that on the network, the biggest shows that we've had is when the two of you have been on the network, and we're glad that we're able to reach out to thousands of people and see, have them see and hear what you have to say. I would like to say before we get started that I think those of you that didn't get to the PTR symposium can find the what Dr. Bryce Young and Linda LeClaire presented on YouTube on their network. Shortly, you'll be able to view it on our network too, fhstca.org, on our website, because they've been kind enough that although they couldn't be in Orlando in October for our coaches workshop, they're going to be part of our certified tennis coaches certification for tennis team coach. And so you can get a head start if you're planning to be in Orlando in October on taking that exam, because if you view that, you're going to find some of the key things that they talk about and why it's important for coaches and pros. You know, they're covering certain things with parents and about what the training is going to be and why at the end of that it's so important to talk and over with them again. And, of course, I don't think anybody explains energy traps better than they do. So some of the stuff that they covered at Hilton Head are actually some of the questions that we have. I will say, I will let them, I will ask those questions with your permission, but I will suggest to you that if you go into Linda LeClaire, the confidence factor, and you go to Doctors, Bryce Young, the courtside coach book, you're going to find those answers here. But I think those of you that were kind enough to give me questions that you wanted answered to, I'm going to ask questions. But before I do, is there anything that the two of you would like to cover about the PTR before I get into questions I have and what your presentation was about and what you think that the people should be looking for?
Absolutely. The Professional Tennis Registry International Symposium is at our home base on Hilton Head Island. And this year there were teaching professionals from 46 countries. So it's truly a wonderful network for everybody who attends. And we're very supportive of the Professional Tennis Registry. What we decided to do was talk about the role of the parent, the athlete, and the coach. And I think that touches each member of your audience, Coach, because what we want to see is that there's a pact. There's a P for parent, an A for athlete, a C for coach, and a T for team. And when everybody plays their role, we have all the cylinders clicking, and we absolutely get the best experience for the young tennis student or the player. And I just wanted to note that, because each of us have a role to play, and we don't want them to run into each other's role. And so what we like to say is that the parent's role, first of all, is to be a positive influence in developing their child through tennis. And so what role they play is they're not only the sponsor, which is the financial support, but they're also the emotional support. And we want them reinforcing good sportsmanship, you know, supporting their child emotionally in the tough times, because nobody plays this great sport and remains undefeated. There are ups and downs all along the way, and that's where we learn the most about ourselves. And we want them to communicate with the coaches an understanding of what their child's tendencies are, how they learn best. They may be visual learners. They may respond auditory to words. They may be feeling type players. They got to feel the shots. And more important than anything else, when that child comes off the court, we want the parent to be a safe haven for the child. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure as a veteran, Hall of Fame level high school coach, you're well aware of the role that the parent plays together with the coach.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. But, you know, often on this radio show and in columns that I've written, I've said if you have a question about coaching, by all means, you should be comfortable, and you should be able to ask the coach, or you should be able to ask the athletic director, but not at a practice, not after a match. Set up an appointment, which I would like to remind everybody now, as most of the time, most people are happy with their coach, and Wilson will be presenting Coach of the Year Award in the 1A, 2A, 3A, and 4A at our FHSTCA workshop in October in Orlando. So if you are happy with your coach, please take the time to nominate he or she to us so that we know and we can recognize them this October. Linda, would you like to expand on what the doctor just talked about?
Go on.
No, I'm just going to say I have some questions I want to get into after that. I did promise people that I would ask. So, but first, okay. I'd like to.
Well, I don't want to go into it too much because I really want to get to the questions that you have. But I do want to tell you about one part of the program that your coaches are going to have access to, and that's the part where we talk about how energy traps affect communication between the player and the coach. And I think that's a really exciting thing to learn about, because a lot of times coaches might not understand why they're not getting through to the player, and vice versa, the player is having trouble understanding from the perspective of the coach. And coming at it from the perspective of how the energy trapped is actually affecting that communication is really exciting. And so that's a part that they'll be learning as well.
And that's so important. It's it's not funny, but it's timely, because my boy Bobby just last week, I'm taking some medicine now, and one of the after effects is that I'm not sleeping at all, and my energy level was, I'm sitting there questioning myself, you know, what's wrong with you? Get going. And my wife referred me, and she said, you're always talking about what Linda LeClaire has to say. How about your energy factor? Maybe it's because of what you're doing. And I went into your book again. And so I'm often telling people, this stuff is important for tennis and it's important for sports. But at some point, when you get old like me, you're not going to be playing the sports that much, but it's still important, and it's still a great reminder.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's important for all of life. So let's get to the questions.
Well, ready for some questions. I have a few of them, and I think you could probably tie them into I recognize some things, and I know I'm always you know, pushing books, and I really encourage people to go online to your site and buy the books, because they're just so, they're handy. And speaking of books, this you know, Linda and Dr. Young, but all the audience doesn't know. I'm sure many of them do. I would never a big trophy person. I always gave out books when I was coaching high school. And, of course, we had the All-Star team in Winter Park Tennis Center Saturday. And we will be giving out the hardcover book, The Hurricane Conspiracy, by David and Nancy Beckwith to our top three teams there. And interesting, I have one of the players says, "You're never giving up. You're always making them study." I said, "No, this is a study book. This is a mystery book. So, you know, don't beat up on me too bad."
Well, Coach, I want to commend you because what many of us have done who have played tennis for a lifetime is relabeled trophies. One of my favorite coaches, Walter Blake, when I was growing up, took all of the trophies he accumulated playing in his lifetime and put new tags on them and gave them out to the next generation of tennis players. And I think giving books is even a higher level because now you're adding yourself in life and sport.
Well, I like that idea with the trophies, if you have them, but I just people in Ireland, Florida, when there's a tournament and everything, they're just they've gotten a little bit of a reputation, and they've kind of some of them put up with me, but I think most of the people see the value and realize that the books are better than trophies. So let me get to some of the questions that came up, and I'm sure you're going to, you know, it's easy for me after viewing the, you know, the symposium and everything to answer some of these things, but I figured better to come from the experts. But let me ask you, first, one of the things that you hear over and over again, and I actually heard it from two different people when asked this question, is why is a player performing so well in practice when it comes to game time? They're different players.
I think both Lynn and I have dealt with that often. And, Coach, really, I think it's very unusual for a player to play as well or better in competition than their practice. I think there's, you know, you have to go to the source or the cause. And, you know, the fear of losing, the fear of not playing well, the fear of what might somebody say about me if I don't do well today. And what we want to do is teach the athlete and give them something to gain every time they go out there. And so one of my favorite coaches when I was coaching college tennis at Pan American University in Texas, Cheryl Benny, used to say, "Every time I play, I win. On the days I don't play, I lose." And what she meant was that you lost the opportunity to add to your game. And so what we like to do with our players is say that go out on the court and tell yourself before you ever take the court, "Today, what I can do, I'm going to do the things I control," and Linda may want to speak to that in terms of the three crowns, "but what I'm going to do is I'm going to go out and give my very best energy to what I'm going to do today, and I want to learn something about myself that has nothing to do with the score or the result, and I know by playing today I'm going to add one or two things to my physical game and my mental game." And so every time you go out there, you're actually adding to yourself. You know, as we all know, tennis is a marathon. It's not a sprint.
And if you look at that from an energy perspective, what is happening is that the focus has shifted. When a player is practicing, usually their focus is going to be on the process and on learning. And when they are focused on the process and learning, there really isn't any extra pressure put on them. They're totally in the moment, and their energy is going to be flowing freely. But what happens when they go into competition, unless they've learned differently, is that they change their focus to something on the outside. And that was what Bryce was referring to, where the fear comes in, because now they're thinking about what will my parents think of me if I lose? What's my coach going to think about me? What if I don't play? excuse me. What if I don't play my best today? And everything, the focus has totally changed to the outside, which is the things that they don't have control over. And so now they're playing from fear instead of playing from love, and they're no longer in the moment. excuse me. And we can help our players to change that by teaching them about staying in the moment, and what they're focusing on. It has to be about what they have control over. And it can take a while to discipline oneself to keep that focus in the moment. But it's really worth doing, and it's worth being patient in the process when we're getting to learning how to stay focused in the moment, and that's really where everything is happening. And so success will come from staying in the moment, not from worrying about how we're going to do.
I think that's an excellent point. I was thinking of that yesterday. I was listening to Coach Chuck Reese's show, and you know, he talks a lot about the tennis gods, and of course there's no tennis gods, and he knows there is an almighty out there, but he talks about you must suffer before you get it, because you're never a master tennis. Tennis is something that there's, and of course he talks about bad pain and good pain, and a lot of people I think are afraid to talk about the pain. But I think that what you're talking, in my opinion, about some of the same things, you've got to love it. You have to understand that this is going to take a long time, and don't be judgmental about it. You know, you're gonna go out there days and you're gonna win, and you're gonna go out there days and you're gonna lose. And if it's the tennis gods, like he says, that is controlling that, it doesn't matter. But I know it took me a while to appreciate. You know, he sit there and he talks about the pain that you have to, he would have players go out and run after, and people said, well, you shouldn't punish people. And it wasn't, he's not talking about punish. He's talking about if you gave it all and you really loved it, and your loss, it should hurt, because you know you gave 100%, you played the same way you practiced, and the results just didn't come in. And like, doctor, like you said, I always say you're at the short end of the score. You didn't lose. You're only going to lose if you didn't learn something from it. But if it gives you an opportunity to learn, and you did learn, then you're just at the short end of the score. You didn't lose. Would you like to expand on that or disagree with me, what a lot of people do?
Yeah, one of the challenges is that in our society, we are really taught to be fearful, and that we're taught that there is pressure and that there is pain, and that's what we're expecting. The focus is not our comfort zone isn't in the moment, because we're used to being outside of the moment and focusing on what we don't control. And on other people's expectations and those kind of things. So it takes a while to get used to being in the moment, and that really feels good, and that is where we perform at our best, and trusting that that's happening. Now, because it actually is fun and enjoyable and feels really good, we don't trust it because we think it has to be hard and it has to be painful.
Oh, excellent.
And so when we're working with people, you know, when we get to take them along incrementally, and you know, when we debrief after a tournament, you know, they'll always tell us the scores and, you know, whether they won or lost and stuff. And you know, I say, you know, I write these scores down, but they really mean nothing to me. It's what, you know, it was what your experience was that I want to hear about. What were you thinking about there, out there? Were you able to stay in the moment? Were you what we call the three crowns that Steve Wilkinson coined? Did you give full effort out there? Was your attitude positive? And what does that mean that you had a positive attitude? You know, describe what it was to us. Were you a good sport out there? You know, and we always ask, you know, well, how was the handshake? Were you able to give a positive reinforcement or feedback to the opponent? And at a young age, that's very difficult for the players to do, but we start them and know that eventually they'll get better at that. And so we break it down to what does it mean to play with a full effort? Describe that. What do you look like when you're playing with a full effort? What when you have a positive attitude, what does that look like? What do your thoughts express? And when we just keep breaking it down and being patient with them, because we know that eventually, it's faster than I'm making it sound. But they start feeling comfortable. Yes, this is what I'm creating. This is what I want to create, and this feels good. And I'm playing better than ever. And so the initial question was, why do I play better in practice? It's because you're actually doing what we're asking you to do in competition, and that's staying in the moment. So it's not as complicated of a question. The answer is really simple, and that is, okay, really just stay in the moment. And Bryce has some things he wants to jump in on.
Well, Dr. Steve Wilkinson, the late Dr. Steve Wilkinson, when he retired after about 40 years of coaching college tennis at a non-scholarship D3 program, had the most team wins of any coach in college tennis. And the only three things he focused on were what he said you had under your control. You choose your attitude, as Linda LeClaire said. You commit your full energy from the first point through match point. And you're a good sport. You call the lines fair, the score fair, you give your best every point. And those you have under your control. All of the other things, the externals, are outside our control. So you see that when you focus on doing the things that you have an opportunity to control, you give yourself the opportunity to also bring your best tennis.
And this is where coaches and parents, their role is very important, because we hear this all the time from our young athletes that they worry about what their parents or their coach thinks about them, or how their parents or coach is going to respond to if they lose. And you know, I know the parents and I know the coaches of these athletes. And they are the best coaches and the best parents, and they're not, you know, it's not like they're putting that kind of pressure on them. But it's so subtle. They pick it up. Unless we, as parents and coaches, are continually focusing on, did they give full effort? Was their attitude positive? Were they good sports? And that's where our focus is. They won't believe that's where we really are. You know, so it's a change that coaches and parents need to be aware of or be willing to make too, because it's so ingrained in us to focus on the win. Did you win? And instead of the process.
And I think that almost brings us into another question, and that is team relationship. I know I always had the first Wednesday of September, October, November, when I was coaching in the high school, they were our parent player meeting, and I always found it's hard to love each other and know each other. Well, if you don't know each other, and it's hard for people to give of themselves. That's why I always wish I had somebody like the two of you with me at those first meetings. But one of the questions is the team relationship, and I think this is what you talked about at the symposium and why there's, you know, the importance of everybody knowing what their positions are and what should be expected. And I think that's something that you really should, you know, it's important for all of us.
Yeah, and, you know, one thing that I think is so important but might be taken for granted is that that very first meeting when the coach is talking with the players is that she or he emphasizes that we are a team and that we have each other's back and that we're in this together. And then even goes on to explain what that means, that we don't talk about each other behind each other's backs, that we are complementing each other, we're supporting each other, and, you know, that we're in this together. And just, you know, a short speech about that can go a long way to eliminating a lot of problems further on in the season. Because that feeling, you want that team unity. You want that team spirit to be developed, and it has to be talked about and encouraged. And that first meeting where the coach lets the players know how glad he or she is that they're on the team and that we're together on this team, that kind of thing.
We had an example just recently.
Yeah.
Of a young player who just returned from a training camp where they had different coaches each day. And he's 13 years old. He's a very, very good tennis player. And he was placed in a group of 14 to 16-year-olds. And the moment he walked up, the coach's reaction was, oh, great, I've got a 13-year-old. What am I going to do with you? And basically, that first statement totally changed everything about this player who could actually compete well with the 14 and 16-year-olds. It wounded his spirit. He totally felt unwelcome and not part of the team. And he said he was really ready to just head back home the moment he heard that. He hung in there overnight, and the next day they got a new coach. This coach had the absolute opposite approach. The moment he arrived on their team, He welcomed him, he smiled, he made sure he had his name right, he shook his hand, he said, "This, you're going to be part of a great team." He had each member of the team introduce themselves to him. He talked about what Coach Linda LeClaire just talked about. We're a team, we're here for each other. Unless we see something good that we can say, we're saying nothing but positive. It's all about that. We're going to have high fives, we're in this together. This player absolutely blossomed and actually contributed to their team win. Same player, two different coaching approaches.
I couldn't agree with you more, Doctor. Just sometimes I think as a society, not just as coaches and players, that we're not good listeners. We're listening to where we can inject something instead of the content of the conversation. And I wonder sometimes if that's where the anxiety is. Some people talk about, like one of the questions was that, you know, and I think you just did a good example of it, you know, how do you sit there and prevent people from having anxiety? So do you agree? That's one of the reasons. Would you like to talk about anxiety a little bit more, though?
Yeah, because that is something that is very common with players, and even with coaches, you know, just being anxious about doing some of the things that we're talking about that are outside of the norm, you know, taking a chance in being more creative in your coaching. But with the anxiety, There are a lot of things, though, now that we do with players that relieve the anxiety. You know, they're nervous, they're anxious about playing, they've really moved into fear. And I do something with the clients, and I've taught this at the PTR, I think, a couple years ago, and I've given seminars on it, and really trying to get this method out. But I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. It's called Emotional Freedom Technique, or tapping, for short. And you tap on different meridian points on your face and hands, and while repeating the thoughts that you have in your head that are making you anxious, whatever the story you're telling yourself that is producing the anxiety. And by doing this tapping, it like calms down your energy and releases those thoughts and the anxiety that comes with it. And it's just such a powerful technique that is very easy to learn and easy to do. And in the last couple of years, I've been using it with everybody at work with and with teams, and both Bryce and I use it in our own lives. So there definitely are techniques that players can learn to help alleviate that kind of anxiety, performance anxiety that they have.
It's interesting you're talking about the tapping, because I remember a couple of years you're doing that. And I do that if I'm at home in the office and I'm anxious about something's coming up. I mean, before the All-Star Tournament, there's all these kinds of things that our handle has just done. Is that there? We got to have the shirts. We got to have everything ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do that. But I must admit, there's sometimes when I'm out in public and I have that same anxiety, and I don't do it. Why is that? Am I just brain dead?
No, not at all. There are a number of things that we do with the players that can be done anywhere. For example, a lot of times with the anxiety, also immediately the breathing gets cut off, and what your brain is crying for is oxygen. And so we actually teach athletes and coaches a focused breathing plan in which they're putting their tongue on the roof of their mouth, inhaling through their nose, exhaling through their mouth, perhaps taking in a count to say three, and making it a deep enough belly breath, as Linda LeClaire calls it, that you can count out to five. So you inhale to 1,000, 2,000, 3. You'd exhale 1,004, 1,005, 1,006, 1,007, 1,008. You have to really breathe deep to have anything left for the exhale. And when you begin to get that kind of focused deep breathing going, you can use it before you go on the court and sit with a tennis ball and just begin to drop in what you want. Only the ball. Only the ball. Only the ball. Just the one important thing that you're going to have when you walk out on the court that day. And what we've found with players is when they're doing that, it takes away these gerbils running around in your brain that are just absolutely driving you a bit crazy. You know, it's like squirrels in a cage when your thoughts just take off. Instead, you're focusing on something you control, which is your deep focused breathing. And then whatever good habits you've trained in have the opportunity to come out again.
And along with that, when you were talking about why don't I do it out in public, and I'm not quite sure, John, why you don't do it when you're out in public. But remember that anxiety is fear. And that energetically, your energy is going to be either stuck or scattered, and it feels uncomfortable. And so becoming aware that you're in fear, and that all you have to do is take care of the fear. Now, you probably went into the fear because you started focusing on things that you didn't have control, kind of like the what-if thoughts, what if this happens, or what if I don't do this, or what if, you know, all the things that we can come up with that to worry about, instead of staying in the moment. And really, that mindfulness is so important, being able to embrace the moment and be 100% doing whatever you're doing in the moment, being totally in that moment. And it's such an easy thing to do, and making it a practice, making it something, a part of yourself, it's the way you are, is such a reward for taking or making the effort to discipline yourself to get started and actually do that. So anxiety, performance anxiety is to me relatively easy to resolve by doing the breathing that Bryce was talking about, by doing tapping, and about refocusing your thoughts. Like if you know, like in giving a speech, people are so, that's one big fear, you know, is getting up in front of people and giving a speech. And the reason is because they're thinking again about how they're going to do. They're thinking about the result or the end instead of thinking about the process and how they're, what they're doing is giving people information that the people want and that their intention is to help people. And when you get back to what the essence of what you're doing is, and you stay with that, there's no fear. And our goal when we're working and helping people with performance is that they learn to soar when they compete, that when they're out there, they're free to be all that they are. They're not feeling like they're held back anymore. And we had an interesting thing with another player who was talking about how he was playing a fun match with a friend of his, and he was taking all these risks, what he called risk shots, and he was just playing great. And when we stopped him there and we asked him what he meant by risky shots, and he, you know, he told us, well, these are the shots that, you know, if I go for them, I, you know, probably win the point, that kind of thing. And we asked him if he could look at that, at those shots differently. Instead of those shots being risky shots, those are reward shots. And so he changed his focus from risky, which invites fear in, to reward, which invites love energy. And so that's what he's been doing. And when we talked to him just last week, he was saying how great it was working, and he loved that term, that these are reward shots. And so when he goes for those shots, his energy is flowing free. He's soaring out there. He's not tightening up. Does that make sense?
I love that. I think that's, wow, I love that. One of the questions was perfectionism. Should I scratch that off the list? Is perfectionism just really what we just talked about, fear?
Well,
should we discuss that or what?
Yeah, perfectionism, we also see a lot of that. And starting at a very young age, you know, these kids, I mean, 12 years old, they're already thinking they have to do everything perfect. They have to get 100% in their academics. They have to win everything. And so it is something that is worth talking about and teaching our young people that perfectionism is not, I'm hesitating because I'm thinking, you know, we're all perfect the way we are. And, but they're thinking in their perfection, thinking I have to be perfect is not realistic. It's impossible. They're setting the bar at an impossible height because there is no, in that kind of thinking, there is no perfectionism. It's never good enough. There's always, it always has to be better. And so when we explain that to them, that they, what we want from them is to do the best they can. And some days our best is really awesome, and other days our best is not really all that good. And that's okay, because that's all that we can ever do in any moment. And it's such a, you know, understanding that. I mean, I work with older, you know, adults as well. And it, sometimes it's like it's the first time they've heard that, that they've ever thought about that is, oh, you know, I might not be able to do the best that I can do, but it's the best I can do in this moment. And how freeing that is, just to trust that, you know. Perfectionism doesn't have a lot of trust in it. And we need to trust ourselves. We need to trust our training. We need to trust the universe that all is evolving as it's meant to evolve. And we are creating the life that we want to create, being aware of what we are creating and going in that direction. That this, you know, this is something that I want in my story. I want my story to read like this. And if we do something that, you know, we look at it and it's like, oh my gosh, why did I do that? I can't believe I did that. I don't want, oh, that was awful. But we don't stay in that place. We do like, oh, okay, next time I'm going to do it like this. I'm going to change that because I don't want that to be part of my story. And so we become more creative with our lives instead of the perfectionism to me limits us. And but when we open up that we can, that we're creating our lives and we're writing our story, we're deciding the kind of person we want to be, how we want to, the kind of energy we want to put out into the world. And it makes it, it just feels so much better. And we know at our spirit level that that's what it's really all about, that that's why we're here. And I love it when we're working with young people and they get it. And they, you know, and they'll come back and say, oh, I, you know, this happened. And how can I handle this coming from love? And pretty soon, you know, they'll ask the question and they have the answer right away as soon as they ask that question. And to me, that's exciting.
Yeah, I think that's the answer. I've always, one of the advantages of being old is I always tell people I was smarter when I was younger, so I'm always asking students questions because I find they can solve a lot of the problems themselves. But I go back to what Doctor said earlier, and I do wonder, and I think as a coach, and I look back, you know, even some of the mistakes I made in a former lifetime coaching basketball, but, you know, you are – today's match is who you were last week in practice in most cases. So therefore, the challenges are always for a coach is how do I make an excited enough with them without, you know, making them feel that they, you know, the competition is not a bad word. It should be challenging, but it can also be fun. I need help.
That's a great point. And in terms of on the court things, what we focus on, I like to call them anchors, because the moment the ball goes out of play, that's the really important time. That's when people need the help on the mental coaching. And so when somebody executes a shot they want to execute, we put all the focus on seeing and feeling the shot. Yes, again, that's it. Run that again all day. You can do that. You know, they take a deep breath and they see and feel what they just did well. We spend almost no time as mental coaches on the mistake itself because we find that the subconscious stores up the mistake. So the moment that mistake is made and the ball goes out of play, we're turning our back on it. We're going to the deep focused breathing. And it's like we just exhale it out, let it go, and we replace it with what we want next time. We see and feel the shot next time. Next time we want this. And the players who develop those two habits tend to feel that they're in a good place the whole match. They don't have these huge ups and downs the players have who are playing really off of their emotions and their spinal cord.
Excellent point. And I think, we've been talking for over 50 minutes already. It's hard to believe. But I'd like to have both of you tell the audience before we go how to get your books. How do we sit there and see you? Because what you just said, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like I remember that from really I shouldn't say old, but a book that was done like 20 years ago called The Courtside Coach that was in there. So, some of the things that, it's, the new things we're coming up with are great and change is important, but there's some fundamentals that really, we need in life.
Well, thank you for that, Coach. We have a webmaster who right now who is setting up the website www.yourmentalcoach.com. And so people can go to yourmentalcoach.com. It should be up probably in the next few hours or 24 hours. And it has all the books available for people to order. It tells a little bit more about how we work with teams, with coaches, with pros and parents. And that way people can get in touch, and we're more than happy to respond to them.
Yeah, and we're really excited about our books, and that's why we can promote them like we are right now, because we really feel like the information is solid. And when I look back at even my first book, which I wrote back in 1997, that the information is probably even more relevant today and probably more well-received today because of the consciousness expanding and people being ready to hear it and are open to learning about themselves as energy and desiring really to come some love in their lives and definitely in their performance as well, instead of coming from fear. I mean, our society is so surrounded with fear and people promoting fear and trying to, manipulate people by using fear. And we are just the opposite. We really want to help people to come from love. And we know that that will make a huge difference in people's lives, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I could. Some of the great rewards are when you have a player go on, and I've had on more than one occasion get an email from college, and somebody said, "I reread this book, I read that book," and quite frankly, your first book, Yes, God Speaks to Women Too. I've had a half a dozen people say how it helped us. I have a young lady that's going to be a doctor next year, and I remember getting an email from her from Yale saying how important it was about 4 or 5 years ago. So I recommend you give books to your students. I recommend that you talk about the books. Don't just give it to them, but talk to them about it. I know I write in them and suggest certain chapters might be appropriate for them, or I would like to get their opinion on, what the author was talking about in that chapter. And I just think it's we need it in society more now than we ever did before. So at our All-Star event, our high school players are going to look great because Team Connection, which we've been blessed with to have as a sponsor, they're going to be dressing them, and they're going to look good. And Team Connection, by the way, is the same people that provide us free uniforms to us high school every year. And maybe I shouldn't say free because the high school is playing it forward. Those kids at this year's All-Star tournaments, the ones with the teams with the highest GPAs, the teams that are out doing enough volunteer work, the teams that are playing USTA tournaments, they're all gathering points for our 2017 team that will be receiving the team connection uniforms. And Dean Street Insurance, the Community Service Award. Think about who in your community. No tennis programs. We all stand on the shoulders of somebody else. And it's your program is more than a high school coach, is more than an athletic director and players. The successful programs have communities involved, and we thank Dean Street Insurance for giving those community service awards. And Wilson, tennis, what can I say? Not only are they supported, they'll have goodies that will be in the Dean Street Insurance goodie bags this year. They'll be presenting the four Coach of the Year awards again this year in October. And they will, and I'm blessed to say, I'm a little bit intimidated in a way. This will be the first year, the first entries into our FHSTCA Hall of Fame. And I will be joining John Posner in there this October. So, you know, we're blessed to have people. And, you know, attend these workshops. Learn from the coaches. I don't know what it is, but I believe, and I found the most successful coaches, the most successful authors, they always have time for you. And if you approach them in the right way and ask them, they're gonna help you and give you advice. And this is what we try to do with the Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association. We try to make the learning curve to become a good and a successful tennis team coach a little quicker than it was for some of us. So we thank you, Dr. Young, Linda. I really thank you for being on. I'm blessed to know you. I'm blessed to be able to share the stuff you've done over the years. And I always tell people the best coaches are the best thieves, and I borrowed more material than most people have. So, last words from you two, please.
Well, just we want to thank you, Coach, and all of the coaches out there for all they're doing, and the players and the athletes. We're all a team together, and when we focus on what we can contribute to each one of these athletes, everybody wins.
So agree with that. And thank you, Coach, for having us on. We really enjoy talking with you.
Well, thank you. And I enjoy, you know, it's funny. Bobby had said, I guess it was a couple hours ago, usually I have papers all over because at my age, the memory. And she says, you're not getting ready for your show. And I said, well, you know, truthfully, this is an easy one tonight because I know and respect these people so much, and we can just talk freely back and forth. And I really enjoy that about you. And I think I'm sure that the people that you work with feel the same way, that there is a comfort zone there. That you create with people, and I've been blessed to know you for a while, and I thank you for keep giving, and we're going to get you down in Florida one day, but I do appreciate you taking the time that we're giving us to introduce your presentation at the PTR Symposium, because I think it is so important, and we will have it up on our site pretty soon. So I thank all of you for coming in. Those of you that started earlier, I apologize. I am late getting into the 21st century. Please tell your friends. Next week we have Chuck Creasy on our broadcast next week. It should be another exciting show. If you agree with him or disagree with him, you know you're going to get what he really believes. And I think that's the important part of life, is a gift from your heart. You know, if you really believe in something, it's easy to sit there and. So thank you. Tell your friends. I look forward to talking with all of you next week. You have a blessed week now. Bye-bye.